Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast. This is episode number 327. Tonight, we have Mark Weiss with us tonight. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing fantastic. And how are you gentlemen doing?
Doing okay. Weather up here in Indiana has been pretty good. How's it been down there?
Pretty good. Except for a little bit of rain, but you know, it's definitely not freezing yet.
Yeah. Well, take that. It's been beautiful here. It's been great.
And Bill wasn't here last week, so we already did 327. This is 328.
Oh, all right. 328.
So you didn't look at your handy dandy new notebook. So
I didn't want to make sure that Mark, notebook.
We want to know that when Mark, you know, people are looking for his interview, it'll be the right one. So.
Yeah. We'll put up as the right one. You'll be good. You'll be happy about there that. That's for sure. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Just chilling in my office and talking to you guys.
Nice. So that's a pretty nice little office you got there. There's some pretty cool memorabilia there.
Yeah, I got my my tour jackets there. I got some, you know, some gold records all over the place and some special photos that mean stuff to me. And I have my kids' Kiss toy guitar that the band signed back when it was like 3 years old, like 30 years ago or something, you know, or actually 27 years ago.
Nice.
But yeah, so I have all my special little keepsakes hanging up, make me feel good.
Cool. You could, when you're ready to retire, you probably sell that to some Kiss geek that will buy it for $3 billion. if that ever get interest you in any way.
you never know,
man. You've got a really cool book out, The Decade That Rocked is really cool. I've kind of thumbed through it a little bit, and really interesting stuff. But I was at your actually when you did your book signing and in Nashville. I happened to just kind of be cruising through, decided to stop at Bowie's just to see what was going on. Ran into Anthony Corder and he goes, man, you ought to come to this gig thing we got going on tonight. So I showed up and didn't realize it was your book signing thing. So that's pretty, it was really cool. It was a good evening.
Yeah, it was fun. We started during the day. I did a little kind of a keynote speaking thing over at Gibson, you know, right at the headquarters over there. And did a little slideshow, had a little gallery going on, and did a book signing there. And then I took it over to Bowie's afterwards to, you know, a little after party.
Yeah, it looks like you were having a little family reunion or neighborhood reunion, if I remember right. There were some guys there that lived close to you and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. So
yeah. I saw Scott McGee there. I haven't seen him for ages, so we kind of reconnected. So that was fun.
Yeah, looked like a blast. So what got you started in photography? What was the catch, the hook?
Just kind of being part of something that, you know, made me feel good, you know, like people that like the same music that I like. So I was kind of going to concerts and that made me feel good. And then when I actually started taking photographs, it was just like a step closer of like kind of really being part of it and feeling, you know, feeling a little special, you know, because I kind of took something that kind of makes people feel, you know, real good about, you know, so that's why I started taking pictures, started giving them to my friends, then I started selling them, and it kind of took off from there.
Cool.
So when you first started out, where were you located at this point when you were taking all these photos? I mean,
Mattawan, New Jersey. It's about an hour out of the city, maybe 45 minutes. So I used to take trains to New York City and sneak in the concert with my cameras and stay up all night and then sell them the next day out of my high school locker.
Nice.
Better That's what I'm saying. If you were, you know, like, say, if you lived where we were at, you know, you get the concert every once in a while, take a couple pictures. Yeah,
the tri-state area, we had Philadelphia, Connecticut, New York City, New York. So there was like tons of concerts. So I would shoot a lot at Convention Hall in Asbury. That's when I first shot Van Halen in 79.
Wow.
And, you know, there was Giant Stadium, you know, it's just tons of places. Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. What was the first major show that you shot or major artist?
Well, sneaking in, my first concert that I snuck into with my camera was Elton John over at Madison Square Garden. I mean, I was 14. There's a small photo in the book because I wanted to, you know, put something in there that was from that show. But then the next day or the next year, I went to see Eric Clapton and I stuck my camera in again. And so that was, you know, pretty cool. But the first big rock star that I shot, like outside of just live, was, I would say, Peter Frampton in 79. Even though I did shoot probably the same year I shot Van Halen backstage in 79. But yeah, there's so many concerts I went to, and it's between 1976 and 77 when I was sneaking in and selling my pictures, like Peter Frampton and Jethro Tull, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Aerosmith, Kiss, Led Zeppelin. So these are all bands that I kind of sunk my teeth into and sold my photographs, and until that fateful day at a Kiss concert that I got arrested for selling my pictures.
Not by Gene, but by one of his by somebody else, by the cops.
And they were cracking down. I mean, not all the time. Like some bands didn't really care. They just let us go. But it was mostly the shirt sellers, but I was in the paddy wagon with all the shirt sellers, and they wanted to just clean it up. So every once in a while, but you know, you had to run from once in a while. I didn't run fast enough that day. But that really was a fateful day for me, because that's when I got arrested and I went to Circus Magazine the next day. Just looked in the magazine. I saw the address was in New York. So I just hopped on the same train, went to the office, and it was good timing. The secretary took a liking to me and she had me wait a few hours, but I patiently waited and saw the art director and actually the owner of the magazine, Jerry Rothberg. And they just kind of saw this kid, you know, just getting arrested. I told them my whole story and they basically told me, you know, do this and do that. And use this film. They told me to use Kodachrome, use a flash, and come back when you think you have some good photos. And so I took it to heart. And about 4 or 5 months later, Aerosmith was playing at Giant Stadium with Ted Nugent. And I had some really good photos and I submitted them. And a couple months later, wasn't instant, you know, like it is today, but I actually had to wait a couple months to appear in a magazine. It was a centerfold of Steven Tyler. And then the ball just started rolling.
Wow. So your first major picture was a centerfold of Steven Tyler. That's pretty damn good.
And that was a deal where you were sneaking in your camera too at that point.
Yeah.
Still yet, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So once you got that or put in the magazine, at that point, did you get credentials where you could go in with a camera? Did that end your sneaking things in, or when did that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I still, whenever I couldn't get a photo pass, because I was still kind of a rookie here, you know, I would still sneak in, but I would use the Circus name to get photo passes. They let me do it, you know, it's because I was getting in the magazine every issue. And then one time, you know, they asked me to shoot Van Halen and on assignment. So the way that goes is they only paid $125 plus expenses, but they get to own the photos. And I didn't care. I just wanted to get in the magazine and get a name for myself. So I did that for a while. Luckily, when they closed shop, Jerry called me up and gave me the photos back, which was
very
thankful of that. So,
wow.
But you know, when you start out, you just want to get a name for yourself. So you're going to say yes to everything. And then once you get a little success, then you can get a little, you know, you can put some rules down and some guidelines and try to make a serious business out of it, which is what I did. So it's all learning steps.
Yeah. When you're first starting out though, I mean, that I know it's not a lot of money, but you're hanging around with Van Halen for a day, you know, or an evening or whatever it is. That'd be like you to keep your $125. I'm just going to hang around and take some pictures, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really care about the money, just, you know,
right,
of course,
right,
get paid, but I just used the money to get filmed, because back then, I always say back then, you know, pre-digital, you know, PD, right, I call it, we had to buy film, and, you know, it cost like $50 for to buy it and to process it, you know, cost some money. And there's only 36 frames in a roll. So you had to choose your moments carefully, unlike today, where you can just kind of go crazy and you spend more time editing the photos than taking them. But, you know, there's pros and cons to both. Yeah.
When did you make the switch are you still doing film? Are you still doing film? Any film work at all?
No. I was working when that happened, digital happened. It wasn't best quality at the time, so I kind of waited till it caught up. And then I at the time I was working for a German magazine called Bravo, which was a weekly big magazine that shot a lot of the pop stars, rock stars. And it was a weekly, and I used to have to like take the photos, develop them, process them, and then sign the custom forms and send them. So by the time they got it, it was like, it could be a week, and then they get held up. So it was a real process. So once the digital came, they insisted on shooting digital, because then you can just shoot it right over. So that was really the catalyst for me to switch over. And so I learned pretty quick on that.
Are you shooting anything now on film still? Or is it strict? No. I didn't know if you still had that love of the film that, you know.
No, it's a tool. You know, you make it look, I always mute the colors so it doesn't look like, you know, so digital. So everyone has their own look to it. I like to, I love digital. You know, you get to take it, look at it, and then process, you know, look, go home and edit it and post it. It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty quick. I work in radiology, actually. So we do similar stuff. We used film for years and photo, you know, process things just like we do for regular, you know, for photo film. But, you know, when it went digital, you know, same thing, you know, pictures are instantaneous, image quality is a lot better, feels a lot better. But, you know, being one of those guys that did film for a long time, I kind of miss it. I haven't done any of it for a long time. I'm pushing papers more than anything now, but it's just interesting how that has changed so much, you know, in both those, you know, both fields. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Is there anybody that you, really, really were excited about getting to shoot, or was the kind of the holy grail for you? Have you shot them yet? Maybe that's the right question.
I mean, I guess all the bands that I shot in the 80s, you know, that I never thought I would ever be shooting would be like bands like Ozzy and, I mean, most of the other bands were just kind of growing when I was growing. So all those bands that turned out to be huge, like Bon Jovi, I was shot when he was 18. You know, Motley Crue, I shot in 82 in the first album. I gave them their first national layout. You know, bands like AC/DC, Judas Priest, I liked. So I was excited to start working with them. I came from the 70s. And I was excited to, you know, like Led Zeppelin was a favorite band. I guess you could say Aerosmith was definitely like a band that was one of my faves. And then the personalities of those guys are amazing. And that's one band I always wished to work for. And I did in an early age. Really, I worked with Joe and Steven in 1980 when they split and they went their separate ways. So I got to know both of them really well when they were kind of on their down spiral. And then when they started getting up again, I was back in the saddle with them for a short time. You have to read the book to get the full story on that one. So this is a whole story on the Aerosmith connection. but you know, bands like, you know, like the Stones or Zeppelin, Queen, those are bands that I wish I would have like toured with or hung with and all that, you know, but I kind of miss that that growing part. And unfortunately, I never really shot any of those bands besides a lot of live shots, which, but you know, there was the photographers that captured that decade. I always feel like each decade has like three solid photographers that kind of like sweep it, you know. And you know, the 70s was like, I feel like it was like Mick Rock, Lynn Goldsmith, and Bob Gruen. I mean, there was tons more. And, you know, of course, in the 80s, it was me, Niels Lozauer, and Russ Halfin, who kind of just kind of, you know, wiped it up. And then there's, I believe in the 80s, there was a lot more photographers because everyone wanted, everyone was fans and everyone wanted to do it. Unlike the 70s, where there was like a good solid handful, if not two, where in the 80s, because of all the magazines and, you know, all the publicity that they were going for and the MTV exposure kind of gave an open door to anyone that really wanted to be a photographer that loved that music. So there was a lot of photographers like that too.
Interesting.
So Mark, with the, you know, how, you know, everything goes through a cycle, you know, and the magazines, you know, something that, you know, Bill and I, and you, I'm sure, you know, when we were kids to teenagers, I mean, that's where you got all your information. You know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have any, you know, you read it in a magazine. The news was already 3 months old at that point. <'cause, you know? laughs> But the thing is, I mean, so now all the stuff you're taking now is basically going on the internet now. It's not really, I mean, there's not a lot of there's still a few magazines that are putting stuff out, but your bulk of it goes to the internet, to certain websites, I guess, and stuff like that. So it's changed from a magazine to a website, basically.
Yeah, what I do with my photos, I sell my archives to, you know, anyone that wants them, you know, the magazines. There's a lot of those magazines. It's in as far as my new photo shoots and my new things that I do, because I just shoot because I love doing it, is I post it to help my brand. You know, I have a site called Rock Scene Magazine that I kind of stopped when COVID happened, but I'm starting to kick it back in. I actually just did a post where I shot Jeff Peck and Johnny Depp, and I'm kind of making like the old style covers of Rock Scene from the 70s. Yeah. And I'm just kind of displaying galleries. It's not like what Cream did, where they're doing stories and trying to get new bands and this and that. I'm just going with bands that I like to cover, bands that I have history with, and also bringing other photographers in that also have their Rock Scene. You know, as long as it's rock, it could be a new band, it could be classic band. It's just a outlet for, you know, photographers that want to get good photography out there, you know? So right. I'm encouraging young people, old people, it doesn't matter how old you are, to shoot and to edit and to submit and to create their own Rock Scene page on the full Rock Scene magazine. So it's in development now. You can see the cover of the page, not the page, the Beck, Johnny Depp issue. And I'll be posting more photographs, you know, as well. You know, just a place to put it and to create the magazine feel of what we had before.
And that's cool that you're including really other neat. People yeah. to do that. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like just like another website. It's, you want to, I'm trying to, what's that thing that the people, like the recipes and stuff that people put in, is
like blogs Reddit, and things like
Reddit
that.
And stuff like that. Yeah. It almost becomes something like that because, like I said, other people trying to do the same thing you're doing. And
you know, yeah, well, I'm cool. trying to, and the thing that is inspiring now is, I started my first photo workshop. I did it at Monsters on the Mountain a couple months ago.
Right.
And there's a lot of bands from the 80s, friends of mine. I figured, all right, this is a good one to start it at. So I put some feelers out. I got a handful of people that signed up, and they pretty much did this whole workshop where they shot the bands. We did some product placement. We shot live, mostly studio. And these guys are pretty good. I also showcased it on my new, I have a TikTok account at Mark Weissguy. So it has about 20 different posts, which are pretty old. They're pretty amusing. I had this kid, Zach, who was an intern. He was my intern for this program, and it turned into, you know, a real good, good little, partnership where, I'm helping him, he's helping me, and I just sent him on his first assignment with Zach Wild with Black Label and Anthrax, and there's going to be a there'd be like adventures, and I'm pretty much telling my story through that, in between, through this Gibson TV interview I did. So there's little clips of that. It's just, it's a little bit different from my Facebook and my Instagram, where I just kind of put, you know, birthdays up and anniversaries. This is going to be a little bit more telling my story and trying to inspire some people to be photographers. So it's pretty cool. It's fun stuff.
Cool.
So you got something out later, or just came out. Is it just came out, or it's coming out? Keep on rolling.
The Kevin Dubrow book.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be out in probably about 6 weeks. You can pre-order it. I have it right here. It's a hardcover, and I self-published it with my girlfriend, Mikkel. And it's pretty much, this is a story of Kevin's tenacity, of how he became Quiet Riot, number one album, heavy metal band to go to number one. And this is through the words and eyes of Missy Whitney, who is the fan club president in Dubrow, and then into Metal Health, the Metal Health album. And it's her memoirs, some notes back and forth to Kevin. These are notes from Kevin to her.
Oh, cool.
And then there's Rudy Sarzo did the foreword, and his mother actually did the afterword. I put some memories in there in the back. He was a really good friend of mine. And just, you know, it's just fun stuff. Things that were in the, it's one of these books. And it's the photography of Ron Sobel, who did all the Randy Rhoads early stuff in the locker room, the album cover from Japan. He was Kevin's best friend, so I got him on board, and then a lot of Mrs. photos, personal stuff. And then my stuff, my photographs when I started shooting them in 1983 at the US Festival. And then I did the Bang Your Head single sleeve a few months after that. So that's when I started, you know, shooting them and being at their video shoots and, you know, kind of taking them to ride the wave with them.
Well, it's kind of cool. I mean, like you're bringing the photos toward the end. You know, you had the fan club and the other guy, you know, putting it in, you know, Ron putting them from the beginning with Brandy, but like I said, then you've got your stuff toward the end. So that's kind of cool. It's almost like a time machine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I end it with, my memories, where that's me and Kevin. And
then, oh, how cool.
And that's me and Kevin at my wedding. He actually, came up and, sang with Zach Wild and Sebastian Bach before they were even in the bands, you know, and wow. Jam for about a half an hour. So that was fun.
Sounds horrible. Just kidding.
It was probably a terrible time. No, not even a memory there. No.
That's awesome, man. That's really
that
cool.
That is really cool.
That's really cool. Is there, before we got to wrap up pretty soon, is there anybody that you haven't shot that you just, that is on your, like, that's your, on your list? You're the person you want to shoot more than anything.
I mean, I go back to the Stones, I guess. If they're still touring, I would love to get on board with them.
And they've got a new record out that just came out, right? I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's either out now or it's coming out pretty soon.
I don't know.
The first new music in 18 years or something like that's what I've heard.
That's cool. So Mark, where are you out of?
I'm in by the Jersey Shore.
Oh, you're still in Jersey. Okay, then.
Yeah, north of Asbury.
I didn't know if you got a California feel or
not. No, everyone, that way. In the 80s, I went over to the L.A. Everyone thought I was from L.A. because I was always there. Anytime there was a video shoot or a band playing, I would always fly over there. But I'm based here. I lived in New York and had a few studios in New York in the 80s. And then I came back and, you know, raised a family. And I'm still, you know, down by the shore.
That's cool. That's cool. You can get all the good concerts too. I live in a cornfield in Indiana. We have to travel. We have to travel to go. I have to go to either Indy, Nashville, Louisville, or St. Louis.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I'm in the middle of that. But we were in Evansville. We're actually Evansville. Kiss was in Evansville. They played that more than actually tied it with Madison Square Garden in that book up till a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And they tore it down, but anyway, yeah.
That's the bad part.
Yeah, that's a bad part. But anyway,
Well, Mark, it's been great, yes. Man, having you for a few minutes. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
So where do people go to promote to pick up these books or to pre-order or to get your older stuff?
You know, The Decade That Rocked, it's still rocking, you know. So, and then you can go to thedecadethatrocked.com, and you know, I sign them and I throw postcards in there and sometimes prints. So there's a lot of different packages, and same with the decade that rocked. You can get the Kevin Dubrow book. I also have my gallery prints that you can, you know, click a link and it will take you to some prints. But I just, you know, encourage people to go to at Mark Weisguy on TikTok. And if you don't have TikTok, I suggest you check it out. It's pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot of stupid stuff, but there's a lot of cool stuff too. So you just got to stay with the cool stuff and ignore the weird stuff, you know. But it's another way to promote yourself and to, you know, share some things that you have to share with people.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I've never seen anything weird on the internet. I don't know.
No, I've never seen anything weird on TikTok either. Nothing
ever. I don't really do TikTok that much, but I'll have to check it out. I will check it out.
Yeah, I also post the same things on my Instagram and Facebook, so I kind of double it up. Okay. It starts out on TikTok and then I throw it on there. But gotcha. But on the TikTok, you just get that adventure. You don't get all the other little things, you know, so you can just see a story at a time.
Cool. Gotcha. Thanks for educating us on that. I didn't.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm old.
Listen, I just got educated with this guy, Zach. And the reason how that happened was, like, a year ago, he came up to me at the Monsters on the Mountain and wanted to be a rock photographer. And I gave him some tips. I said, you do this and do that. And then a month before this Monsters on the Mountain, where I had the workshop, his dad called me up and said, you know, we're going to be there, but when can we sign up until, because I'm not sure if, you know, we're on vacation and with the family, not sure if it's in the budget yet. So I said, just let me know whenever. And he goes, yay. I said, so how's your son doing? He goes, oh, he's doing good. He's got this TikTok channel and he's got like 650,000 subscribers. And he's got a video that went viral, 54 million. I'm like, and I'm thinking, at this point, I'm thinking, wait, intern, maybe I'll do a little. So we kind of made a deal and we kind of like put our adventures together on me creating this TikTok channel and him kind of intern for me. And it worked out really good. And one of my first videos up there got 34,000, views. And
wow.
And I'm putting on a lot of stuff. So, you know, it's good. It's good. And a lot of it's like of photographers learning how to take pictures. And you'll see all the behind the scenes photo shoots with Queensryche, Kicks, with Vixen. And these guys shooting them, you know. So there's about probably like 15 bands that we shot.
Wow. That's so cool. I've checked that out.
Yeah, the Monsters of the Mountain, that's down in Pigeon Forge, right?
Right. It's in Gatlinburg. Yeah. It was in Gatlinburg.
Yeah. I'm only about 5 hours from there. So we sometimes we'll go down there. But no, that's cool as hell.
All right, man. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm glad you had a chance to talk. I appreciate you spending the time and spreading the word.
Yep. We'll get it out there.
We'll definitely check out the book. So,
all right.
All right.
All right. See you later.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.